You're listening to Radio Hangar, where the aviation conversation never stops. Welcome back to the hangar. I'm Taildragger, and folks, I have been wanting to do this one for a long time. Today we're going to talk about Amelia Earhart, and before you groan and say, oh, here we go, another disappearance theory, let me stop you right there. We are not doing that today, not even a little bit. What I want to do is something that I think is long overdue. I want to talk about the actual pilot, the woman who climbed into airplanes and flew them. Because somewhere along the way, Amelia Earhart became more famous for how she vanished than for how she lived. And that, my friends, is a real shame. Today's show is brought to you by AviationSoul.com. If you love aviation the way I love aviation, and I know you do because you're listening to this, go check them out. Gear, apparel, gifts for people who live and breathe flying, AviationSoul.com. All right, pull up a chair. Let's go back to the beginning. Amelia Mary Earhart was born in 1997, July 24th, in Atchison, Kansas. And here's something most people don't know. She didn't fall in love with flying the first time she saw an airplane, not even close. She was about 10 years old when her father took her to the Iowa State Fair, and she saw her first aircraft. She later said it was a thing of rusty wire and wood, and she wasn't impressed at all, not one bit. She was more interested in the roller coaster. It wasn't until December of 1920, at an air show in Long Beach, California, that something clicked. She was 23 years old. A barnstormer named Frank Hawks gave her a ride, and she later said that by the time they'd gotten 200 or 300 feet off the ground, she knew she had to fly. Think about that for a second. That moment, that exact moment, when you knew. Most of us who fly, we remember ours. Hers happened at a few hundred feet over Long Beach, in an open cockpit biplane. The wind in her face, the Pacific Ocean stretching out below, and everything changed. Now here's where it gets interesting. She didn't just sign up for flying lessons. She worked for it. She took a job at the telephone company. She worked as a photographer's assistant. She did whatever she had to do to scrape together the money. Her instructor was a woman named Anita Snook, who everybody called Nada. Nada flew a Curtiss Jenny, a Curtiss JN-4 for you purists out there. And Amelia showed up ready to learn in January of 1921. 6 months later, she bought her own airplane, a little bright yellow Kinner Airster biplane. She called it the Canary. Now the Kinner Airster had a 60-horsepower engine. 60 horses, you could barely pull a plow with that today. But Amelia took that little yellow biplane and in October of 1922, she flew it to 14,000 feet, set a women's altitude record. She'd been flying for less than 2 years. And this is the part of the story that always gets lost in the mythology. Amelia Earhart was a skilled, dedicated, hardworking pilot who earned her way into every cockpit she ever sat in. She wasn't a celebrity who happened to fly. She was a pilot who happened to become a celebrity. There's a big difference. Now let's talk about 1928. This is where most people pick up the story and where things get complicated. She became the first woman to cross the Atlantic by air. But here's the part that bothered her for the rest of her life. She was a passenger. She didn't fly the plane. A pilot named Wilmer Stultz and a mechanic named Lou Gordon actually flew the Fokker F7 trimotor, which they called Friendship, from Trepassey Harbor, Newfoundland, to Bury Port in Wales, 20 hours and 40 minutes across the North Atlantic. Amelia sat in the back and kept a log. That was her job. And when they landed, all the attention went to her. The press swarmed her. She was an instant international sensation, and it genuinely troubled her. She told reporters, quote, I was just baggage like a sack of potatoes. He, meaning Stultz, did all the flying. I just sat there, end quote. Now, most people would have taken the fame and run with it. And sure, she used the celebrity. She was smart enough to know what it could do. She endorsed products, she wrote articles, she gave lectures. She was a sharp businesswoman. And she had a manager named George Putnam, who later became her husband. But the fame ate at her. She knew she hadn't really earned the Atlantic crossing, not as a pilot, and that drove her. 4 years later, in May of 1932, she went back and did it right. She took off from Harbor Grace, Newfoundland, in a Lockheed Vega 5B. Now let me tell you about the Vega, because this airplane matters. It was a high-wing monoplane, all wood construction with a plywood fuselage skin. Beautiful airplane, fast for its day. It had a Pratt & Whitney Wasp engine putting out about 450 horsepower, cruised around 160-170 miles per hour, but it was a handful. In turbulence, in ice, at night over the ocean alone, it was a very serious airplane to fly, and that night, everything went wrong. She hit a storm almost immediately after takeoff. The altimeter failed, ice formed on the wings. She could feel the airplane getting heavy, sluggish. She dropped down low over the water to try to get below the icing. How low? Low enough that she said she could see the white caps in the moonlight breaking beneath her. We're talking maybe 100 feet above the North Atlantic, in the dark alone with no altimeter. Then a weld in the exhaust manifold cracked. She could see flames licking along the engine cowling through the windscreen. She had to decide right then, turn back or press on. She pressed on. 14 hours and 56 minutes after takeoff, she landed in a cow pasture near Londonderry in Northerry, in Northern Ireland. A farmer walked up to the airplane, and she asked him, "Have I crossed the Atlantic?" He looked at her and said, "Well, you have." She was the first woman to fly solo across the Atlantic. The second person ever, after Lindbergh. And she did it in conditions that would have made a lot of experienced pilots turn around. This is the Amelia Earhart that I wish more people knew. Not the mystery, not the disappearance. The pilot, the woman who could feel ice building on a wing, by the way, the controls responded. The woman who made the call to keep going with flames coming off the exhaust stack. That takes something that you cannot fake, and you cannot fake, and you cannot buy. That is airmanship. And she didn't stop there. January of 1935, she became the first person, man or woman, to solo from Honolulu, Hawaii, to Oakland, California. That Pacific crossing was 2,400 miles over open water in the same Lockheed Vega, 18 hours and change. She reportedly drank hot chocolate and listened to the Metropolitan Opera on her radio receiver during the crossing. Just casual, right? Just a solo Pacific crossing with a thermos and some puccini. Later that same year, she soloed from Los Angeles to Mexico City, then from Mexico City to Newark, New Jersey. She was racking up first not because she was chasing records for the sake of fame, but because she was proving something. She was proving that a woman belonged in the cockpit, that this wasn't a novelty, that it wasn't a stunt, it was flying. And here's something else that gets overlooked. She was a fierce advocate for women in aviation. She helped found the 99s, which is the International Organization of Women Pilots, back in 1929. It was named for the 99 women who showed up to that first meeting. She was their first president. That organization is still going strong today, still supporting women pilots, and it started because Amelia Earhart looked around at the aviation world and said, "We need to stick together." She also pushed for commercial aviation acceptance. She flew with the early airlines. She was an advisor to Purdue University's aviation program. She believed deeply that air travel was going to transform the world, and she wanted women to be part of building it. Now, I'm going to say one thing about the final flight, but only one thing, and it's about the flying. In 1937, she attempted to circumnavigate the globe at the equator. She was flying a Lockheed Electra 10E, a twin-engine all-metal monoplane, two Pratt and Whitney Wasp Jr. engines, 550 horsepower each. It was a real airplane, heavy, complex, multi-engine. She had Fred Noonan as her navigator, one of the best celestial navigators in the world. They made it almost all the way around, 22,000 miles. They'd completed roughly 80% of the journey. On July 2, 1937, they departed Ley, New Guinea, heading for Howland Island, a tiny speck of coral in the middle of the Central Pacific, about 2,500 miles over open ocean. Their target was a flat strip of land barely a mile and a half long and half a mile wide. Try to imagine finding that with celestial navigation, no GPS, no radar, no modern avionics, just a compass, a chronometer, the stars, and a whole lot of math. They never arrived. And what happened after that? The theories, the searches, the speculation, that's consumed the Amelia Earhart story ever since. And I think that's tragic, because it turned one of the greatest pilots of the 20th century into a mystery to be solved instead of an aviator to be celebrated. She logged over 1,500 flight hours. She held multiple speed and distance records. She flew single-engine monoplanes solo across two oceans. She could deadstick a Vega into a cow pasture in Ireland and walk away asking directions. She was tough, she was smart, she was brave, and above all else, she was a pilot. So next time somebody brings up Amelia Earhart and the first words out of their mouth are about what happened over the Pacific, do me a favor. Tell them about Harbor Grace. Tell them about the ice on the wings and the cracked exhaust manifold and the whitecaps 100 feet below in the dark. Tell them about a woman who bought a 60-horsepower biplane called the Canary and turned it into a career that changed aviation forever. That's the real story, and it's a better one. Now I want to give credit where credit is due. A lot of the historical detail in today's segment comes from research published by the 99s organization, the Smithsonian National Air and Space Museum, and several accounts compiled by the Purdue University Archives, which hold a significant collection of Earhart's personal papers and flight records. Also drew on reporting and historical features from AOPA and EAA over the years. This is Radio Hangar, an AI-generated broadcast built by pilots who care about getting the story right. If you want to learn more about the show, head over to radiohangar.com. I'm Taildragger. Go read about the real Amelia Earhart. Go read about the flying. And then go do some flying yourself. Radio Hangar. Keep the blue side up.